know what? I'll sit next to him.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to review some of these halachas, to answer some of the questions that were raised at the last year. And I find it very gratifying that the members of the community recognize that tzedakah is not only a mitzvah which must be performed, but also must be studied. We know that the Torah may reveal the days of Hirus. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to review some of these halachas, to answer some of the questions that were raised at the last year. And I find it very gratifying that the members of the community recognize that tzedakah is not only a mitzvah which must be performed, but also must be studied. We know that the Torah may reveal the days of Hirus, that by studying about the mitzvahs it enables us to perform them in a better way. And some of the halachas that we're going to say today are of great import, and people don't realize that. I would like to first, before addressing some of the questions which were posed to me in the intervening weeks, and I imagine there may be other questions which I will be happy to take from the floor, because that's the whole purpose of this, is to clarify some of your questions. There's one point I forgot to mention last time, which as soon as I walked out, I forgot. And I'm glad I have an opportunity to make that up. And that is as follows. We know that when we have this custom, or maybe even a halacha, known as Maaser Ksavim, tithing, giving one-tenth. We spent so much time last time, the details of A, how you calculate it, B, how you divide it, how you distribute it. I neglected to mention what I consider to be a very important way to maximize and to improve the fulfillment of this halacha of Maaser Ksavim. And that is as follows. Baruch Hashem, people in the community make a parnasa, and they get paid. When they get paid, so they have, especially individuals who are on salary, are getting paid on a somewhat regular basis. Let's start with that before we get to the business level. Let's see salaried individuals. So money comes in once a week, 2 weeks, once a month, so it comes in. The preferred method is to set up what I call a Maaser account, which means that you get paid $1,000 a week, you get a check for $1,000, let's say after all these deductions can be so wild. But okay, well let's say you get after the bottom line, after everything else is $1,000, that comes into your account. The proper thing to do is to have a separate bank account, which you put $100. Right away, you get $1,000, you put in $100. What am I going to do with it? What about that later? Worry about that later. First, designate it into what we call a Maaser account, and in this way you have the ability to spend that money when an appropriate tzedakah cause, which we described last time at great length, comes along. You have the money in the account. This is good for a whole number of reasons. Number one, it becomes a habit. It's an automatic. There are certain people have certain times they want to give out X dollars to pension. So they get a certain amount of money. Right away, X dollars, you don't even think about it. Goes to the pension. But it doesn't hurt. But it goes to the pension. So too, they make X dollars, so one-tenth goes right straight into the Maaser account. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt because you have to give Maaser. Later on, when some guy comes and says, give me money, I need money for this yeshiva, I need money for myself. So we have a habit of stinginess sometimes. That's all with your own money. Why should I be stingy with Maaser money? It's not mine. It's already in the Maaser account. So when a person comes to ask us for the money, we don't feel that he's putting upon us. He's taking from us. On the contrary, he's giving us an opportunity to be able to take the previously designated Maaser funds and find an appropriate vehicle for it to be spent. If the whole mentality changes, everything is different. This is not coming to take your last dime. It's coming to give you an opportunity to take all those dimes you put away in the Maaser fund and find an opportunity to spend them properly. That's, I think, a very important question I neglected to mention last time. Now, someone who's in business, I'm not an accountant nor a businessman, but if it's possible to make a similar calculation when profits come in, however it's calculated, you'll have accountants, they have systems how they do it, it would be equally appropriate to put that money into the Meister fund as it comes in, and again, give it out whenever an opportunity arises. That's the most important thing I forgot last time, because I just didn't discuss it at all. And if you don't do this, it becomes complicated. You start giving out a few dollars here, a few dollars there, and start making calculations. Did I give? What did I make? What did I give? And how much? And how this gets very complex, and often the result is not as good, and even the mentality is not as good. When you give tzedakah money, an equally important part of the tzedakah itself is in interpersonals, when you deal with individuals, whether they're representing themselves, or even representing others or institutions, is how you give the tzedakah. How you give the tzedakah. You can give tzedakah a large amount, but you give it with such a, grimace that, but if you give the money with a smile, it's a whole different story. I think Gemara speaks about it explicitly with Sefta B'Mavastra, that you have to give the money cash, you also have to give it with a smile, how you encourage the individual, you give them chizuk, and it's much easier to do that when it's not coming out of your pocket, it's coming out of Meister's pocket, it's coming out of a different account. The mentality changes, and it's critical for that reason alone. Okay, that's point number one I wanted to make today before I even start answering any of the questions that were raised last time, because this is what I have forgotten to mention. A number of questions were raised at the shiur itself, and in the intervening weeks. One question was, am I obligated to give tzedakah to every person who comes and puts his hand in front of me? Am I obligated to support such a person? Must I give him money? So on the one hand, there are serious prohibitions. Los ameitz, as levavka, velo sikpos, as yodka, me'achicha, evyon. You're not supposed to have a tight fist, right, or somehow a closed heart when your brother who is in need comes to you. So our first instinct is, of course, someone puts out his hand, you must fill it, you must put money in there. However, recently Poskim have ruled to the contrary, that you're not required. When I was in Yerushalayim HaKodesh, which is a city, has its share of individuals who come around, wherever you're going to daven, anywhere in the holy cities, and in the more we'll call Haredi communities, neighborhoods, it's even that much more. You go daven, I know when I'm in Yerushalayim, I stay in Harnof, and I usually go to the cross to the Rebbe Shtibel. It's not just that. Like everything else, there's no better or worse, just keep coming and coming and coming. So my father-in-law, with whom I stayed, Zayn Gosset and Stark, he already learned the trick after many years of living there. He has his 10 agura pieces lined up on a table. Every day he comes, takes out a towel from Philim, takes out his 10 agura pieces, and people probably give his 10 agura. 10 agura, 10 agura is about a little more than 2 cents, you know. And he gives, after a while, you can have, I don't know, whatever it may be, I don't know how I could ever count how many there are there. He keeps giving, they keep coming, he keeps giving. And everyone's happy. He gives everyone a couple of cents, and they come, the same people come every day. They add it up. That's how it is. But I can't, I don't have time to take 10 agora pieces. I want to focus on more of my davening. So I asked them a few shaylos, what do you do? They said, in the name of Rebbe Yashiv Shalita, you're not mechuyev. You're not required to give everybody comes around to ask you for money in the middle of davening, you're not required to give him anything. But often Rabbi Yashiv was psukim without amplification. And I didn't hear the reason for it. I did a little research of my own, and I heard some interesting reasons why this may be so. One, the name of Rabbi Avram Shapira, the former chief rabbi from Yerushalayim, who said, why am I obligated to give this individual stock of money? He has a good business. business is collecting tzedakah from everybody else. It's a business. It's a business. It's not coming just to you. Someone says, you know, I need help, I need your help. This guy's going all around the whole city. He can very often have more money than people who are giving money to him. That's not considered necessary to reach tzedakah. That was the way I was told in his name. I spoke to others to get the following rationale. The Gemara Baba Kama seems to say that, and this of course will be much more selective, this next point, that a person is required to give tzedakah to individuals who attempt to make a parnasa, and their attempts fall short. They have a business, they have a profession, they have a job, they have a salary, whatever they have, and now the needs are overwhelming. And we also happen so many times, a large family, all kinds of different needs. And therefore, I'm required to help him get over his difficult time. And the difficult time could be an entire lifetime. But it's only referring to a case of a person who is attempting to help himself. As it says in a different context, Ozov, Tazov, Imo. If someone is straining, not under a financial strain, but under a strain of heavy packages, Ozov, Tazov, Imo. He's carrying, I carry with him. But what happens if someone has heavy packages and he says, I say, can I help you? He says, yeah, give me everything. You take it. And he walks like this. You're not required to help him. So in a similar vein, a person who is not attempting to find a job, he's not attempting to make a parnasa. He's quite content to put out his hand and have everyone fill it. That's not Otav Tazav Imo. He is not trying to earn a livelihood. Perhaps, according to these authorities, there would be no obligation upon the individual of the general community at large to give him parnos. A second reason. Even according to those who would say that you are obligated to give him something, nonetheless, as I mentioned at the outset, you're not required to give him his whole parnasa. You give him a little bit, and the thinking is, he's going to everybody. Sometimes only to me, so I have to give him demach, so asher yechzal lo nefashot, to give him as much as he needs just to fill out that void. He's going to so many people. So if everyone gives him a 10 agorot, just add it up, multiply it, they're not even required to give more than that. You want to give more, certainly that's admirable, but we're discussing now the absolute obligations of tzedakah, and it does not apply in such a circumstance. I want to make this very clear, because people often are very bothered by this question, and someone actually asked it to me recently.
Solicitation by mail versus
mail solicitations are clearly less compelling than personal solicitations. Someone comes to you, it comes to the human being, Kavod Abrius, it's supposed to, it's considered improper, barring these considerations, just to send them away with nothing. But, in the mail, you take the mail and put it in a circular file. You're not required to respond to every mail. That's endless.
Telephone,
I have a rule of telephone. I never pledge anything on the phone, ever. And the reason I do it is because I shouldn't think that, Rabbi, you pledge this, and say you're a liar. Is that true? I never pledge anything on the phone. How can you remember? Someone catches you on a call waiting. I didn't write it down. And I just refuse. Send me a letter, I told him. And then the letter I throw to the circular phone. I mean, sometimes I respond, and sometimes I don't. But I think committing the phone is a very dangerous thing. We didn't speak about it too much last time, but there's a little bit. The idea of nidreit tzedakah. Generally speaking, we're very much afraid that we shouldn't make a commitment which we're not going to honor. That's a terrible, terrible thing. So if you're going to give tzedakah, the best thing is don't commit necessarily, unless we spoke about last time, an appeal. We had an appeal in the interim. Baruch Hashem was a successful appeal from Baal Shechitim. People who called out pledges. And the reason for that, not to show off, Chalila, we don't believe in showing off, but to inspire others to do the same. And the appeal was successful. People gave money, and I spoke to the treasurer today. He told me two things. One is that he's still waiting for the pledge from the Hashkama Minyan, still waiting for it. doesn't count, there's going to be an appeal there too. Number two, people have been giving more than they announced. More than they announced. Then people have announced 500 and gave 1,000. That warms my heart. I'm very impressed with that. And Baruch Hashem, we're trying to give out the money.
That would be,
Mos Chitim, as we pointed out last time, is a very important obligation. It's the first halacha of Pesach. Mos Chitim, most posts can say, especially the way it's done today, it's not a local obligation. It used to be every town had its own aniyim and its own people who are more wealthy, and they taxed every person. It was a tax. You can't pay taxes for mice. You can't have what we call chiyuvim for mice. For example, in Yonah the Yom, Matanas Lev Yonah, says in the Mogan Avraham, you can't discharge a minimal obligation of Matanas Lev Yonah from mice. What is the minimal obligation of Matanas Lev Yonah? You'd be surprised. You have to give to two poor people. How much? The Ritva says one truta to each. And those who disagree say one meal's worth each. Right, so you have to go and say, have a meal. So aside from giving your friend Shalach Manas, you give a poor person, the way you said last time, a few dollars, $5, $10, so that to be able to buy a piece of bread, a piece of meat, a cup of wine. You want to give, Baruch Hashem, someone gave me today in shul, a check of $400. Put it in my pocket. Beautiful. Matanas Lev Yonah. So I would tell him, the first few cents, or maybe a few dollars, he really should be giving from his own funds. But the overwhelming majority, 98% or something like that, can in fact come from my funds, because it was not part of the basic obligation. That's the same thing. Yes?
Two things. Is it possible that Yosef's stock was based on Oisiku Mitzvah, Potsdam Mitzvah, talking about people who were davening, and therefore, if someone meets them outside of davening, they might be free to give them?
Very possible. I can't answer the question. I haven't heard the rationale for it. Rabbi Barish says, there's a principle in halacha that if somebody is busy doing one mitzvah, he's exempt from giving a poor person a pruta. That's pruta de Rabbi Yosef. Moses says that somebody who's doing a mitzvah is called a shomer socher. He's exempt. You're taking care of some kind of someone's aveda. You're exempt from giving stuff at that moment.
But
could be even if you can do both. You can walk and chew gum at the same time, but that's what actually the kind of shneim. But while you're doing the mitzvah, you're not required to give the proof. That's a very good rationale. That, of course, limited to occasional limits, if that's the case.
Secondly, the people who are collecting money for things that, like a Hanukkah scholar, where they need much larger money, ultimately, the one they can get from someone's tenagurot. Right? So then that person has to be, if everybody's going to give this person just the 2 cents, the person will never have the money to go ahead and marry off his daughter or his son.
Never say never. It depends how many of everything is called pruta, pruta, mitzav, lachesh, vagodol, the Gemara says. I guess it depends what kind of wedding he's making. But that brings us to another topic. People are coming to Hachnasas Kala for the wedding. No. They're coming for the dira. They're coming for, they want to buy an apartment for their children. Now, I've searched the Tariag Mitzvahs. I haven't seen that you're required to buy an apartment for your child. However, in Eretz Yisrael, it's mekubal, it's accepted, that when youngsters get married in these circles, that's the irony, in the poorest of circles, so they try to buy them an apartment. And I think that we should try to help. But, where are they buying the apartment? I say, where are you buying? You're not asking such a question. You want me to help you to help your child for the apartment? Where are you buying it? I'm buying it in Arze Abira. That, I don't know, how should I describe that? Arze Abira is a fairly expensive part of town. I'm buying it in Rehavia. I'm buying a car from Park Avenue. Could you please help me out?
Riverdale.
Even Riverdale, all right, the Riverdale. I don't know. Riverdale. Say, I don't know, maybe. But what's more appropriate is someone who needs to spend the money, and that doesn't have his own money, have his own money whatever he wants. To come into the community at large to help you to buy a dira for your child, I think we should be receptive, but ask what the dira is. I'm going to buy it in Ashdod. I often have these things. I'll buy it in Beitar. I'll buy it in Bet Shemesh. I'm buying in Chatzor and Arad, where some of the Geras are, or in Kiryat Sefer, or in El Ad, the new is a new building, the prices are much lower. Bet Shemesh, if they're not necessarily, depends where Bet Shemesh, are you right? But it's still lower, no matter what it is, it's lower than Yerushalayim. And there, to help someone out, is I want to buy an apartment in the middle of Rehov Chazon Ish B'nei Brak. It's very expensive. It's, you know, they say, but I'm not a realist, they say location, location, location. So I mean, I don't know if we're mechuyev to help someone buy an apartment in the most expensive location. Yes?
Two questions that they touched upon already. If someone could ask you to start at the middle of Rehov Kriyashma, what's your obligation
at that point? Rabbi Barash already paskin correctly. Also, the mitzvah part of the mitzvah. You have no obligation. But still, if you feel that you can sell a diamond at the same time, pull out a penny or whatever, a dollar, as it can say be, I think you're allowed to do so. I don't want to make any issue. Although in our shul, we try very hard to ask the people who, when they're coming around, not to come around during those times. They come at the end, toward the end of davening, you know, by Aleinu, now, Chazor HaShas is a big question. I'm a big stickler that Chazor HaShas is supposed to be focused on what the Siddur says, not on what's going on outside. Because, you know, now you, when Ani comes, you'll start collecting for an Ani in Chazor HaShas. Next thing you know, you'll talk to your friend how to buy a stock so you'll have enough money to give the Ani next time. And you should be discussing the stock market during Chazor HaShas. So I really prefer that they come in a later time.
Is it safe to assume
that you're sent something, a safer or anything, with the mail solicitation?
Is it safe to assume that was a matana and you're not obligated to...
In my view, any safe that's sent to you in a mail solicitation is bechinam. They can't expect you to pay the money, nor can they even expect you to send it back. And frankly, if you know in advance that it's some kind of a solicitation and you don't want to pay, we should write it, return to sender. The question is, I'm not sure the laws of the mail. If I open it up, can I then put return to sender? Yeah, you can? Okay.
Okay.
Same envelope? Okay. So then what should be done, it's not right to enjoy the safer and not to give anything. That's not right. It could even, I know, it may not be Xayla. He sent it to you. But it's not right. So, but I wasn't aware the return to sender option existed after it's already been opened. Now that Mark tells me it is, that would be appropriate. The return to sender.
I use it. I hope they don't try to put it in. I mean, what else? They never return it to me when I put it on the mail. And
what do you put in?
Put it in the mailbox.
What do you put in, for example?
The same envelope. Let's say I open and I see that there is a present. Usually, if it's a big safer, you know, Hatzila, there is a big safer, but a smaller thing even. I close the envelope with Koshtay.
And what happens to it?
I put it back. I never
you put it in the mailbox?
No, yeah.
So you're not sure it gets there?
So where else?
Where else? Yeah. One can only imagine. I don't know. I don't know where. It ended up in the garbage. I don't know. I don't know. Why don't you try to find out what happens? Yes?
You mentioned that there's a higher level of clear to give stuff if someone is working or is attempting. Large family, what's the job, now working part-time. To what extent
would
one
of these
stuff to get to that?
Anyone who's trying to find a job, to the contrary, that's the highest obligation. What I mentioned before is only to individuals who seek to perpetuate a culture of not working and of surviving and of the life that is tzedakah. That's not right. Ozov tazov imo. The person should try to make a parnasa.
And up to what amount? One has, let's say, X dollars set aside for suffers. One will please to give it to this one individual.
Oh, I was going to answer. I'll come to that a little bit later. Someone comes to you and says, I was told that you went to a shir by Rabbi Willig, and he said you have to put 10% in your maaser fund. I said, yes, you're right. You have good spies. Okay, give me all your money. Give me your money. I know you by now, you must have by now a few thousand dollars. I need it. What do you mean, give me your money? I can demonstrate to you I need a few thousand dollars. I need it. I qualify. I have a livelihood. I have my kids, my stuff, my salary. I work in a job. It's not enough. I explain to you I have so many children. I have so many medical bills. I can't do it. I want all your money. Empty out your account and give it to me. they're not required. They're not required. The person cannot tell you, cannot dictate to you how to spend your maaser money. You can spend it the way you please.
I can decide.
Ah, well, we spoke about it a little bit last time. That if there are various priorities, a stakel on the year is a very high priority. Very high priority. In the interim, between last shiur and this, I don't know if Evan was here last Shabbos when we made an appeal. We made a reference, I'll just make a reference to it this time, to the Rashi in Sefer Melachim, Aleph, Perek, Zayin, Pasuk, Nun Aleph, I believe it's the first Pasuk of last week's Haftarah, Pekudei, where according to one interpretation of Rashi from the Yalkut Shimoni, David HaMelech is castigated for allowing the money that he had accumulated for the building fund, for the Beis HaMikdash, to remain in the building fund while people were dying of starvation. And for this reason he was punished. The money was never used, ultimately, by his son Shlomo. So that priority that we spoke about in it from a different perspective, the Yerushalmi and Peah, what about the Gra? If we have a chance, we'll open up the Shofanar ultimately. There's another source for it in the Rashi and the Yalkut and Sefer Melach. So there is a priority to give money for poor people who have nothing. It's interesting. I mentioned, I think, in my appeal this week, shoes. So I was speaking to this fellow who was here yesterday, Rabbi David Cohen, who has a beautiful network of stock in Yerushalayim. There was even a little article I made reference to, some of you may have received copies. He wanted to give people shoes. He bought his shoes, he says he has it, or he takes them to a shoe store, gives them a voucher from a shoe store. Shoes are very expensive in Eretz Yisrael. Expensive here too, but relatively speaking, it's...
So Imani has a higher priority than yeshiva?
I believe so. Now some yeshivas are both. Not only are you supporting Torah, but who are the people who are in the yeshiva? B'nai Aniyim. You have a combination of Aniyim and Torah. But if you want to, I don't want to mention... But there's some yeshivas that they're people, they're not the Chaniyim, right? They're wealthy people, but they still have a shortfall. Okay, even if wealthy people have a shortfall. I'd rather say it's better to give the money to poor people. And some of this yeshiva will cover its budget, some of some other ones.
Other forces like Hatzalah, like where does that come
in? Hatzalah's Pikuach Nefesh. It's nothing more than saving lives. Well, of course the question is, if you give extra money to Hatzalah, will that money save lives? That's always a very difficult judgment call. I'm looking for a sponsor to buy what we call a defibrillator for our shul. I spoke to Dr. Alderbell, who was here, the cardiologist, told me that, as I read in a recent article, the defibrillator in a shul has been known to save lives. Well, we hope everyone's going to be healthy here for forever and ever, but it has saved lives in public places. And if someone wants to give the money for a defibrillator, it's only a priority. But you know, I can't speak with, you know, it's chances, it's statistics, it's actuarial. Will it save a life? Will it not save a life? We hope never someone is dying. We hope never to have to use it. So well, I spent thousands of dollars. I could have given over hungry people money. I'm not here to make that call. Whatever the people, they're both valid causes. Yes.
Person in Koilan, where does in the system where he does receive money every month, what does he call when the Rav says that somebody who, the people who have a job and they look for a job, there are people who don't even bother and they don't have any arrangement or anything, they go, they're looking, like Rav says, they go every morning, they go on the round with the shuls and after Parnassah and they rely exclusively on tzedakah. What does a Koilan person...
Ask the Shalom to compare a Koilan person to the person who's going around all day and with his hand out. Thank God we have enough dignity in our community to try to see to it, individuals who are learning full time, really learning full time, that we try to support them. This is a wonderful, wonderful thing. A person who was in Kollel is studying full time, doing what many of us should be doing. Because after all, there are numerous stockbrokers and lawyers and bankers and businessmen who are, Baruch Hashem, being very successful, and what would be appropriate is to take part of our money and to support those of us who are, after all said and done, with all this noise, after all is said and done, is a very small minority within our community. After all, the Torah, but Lakewood has thousands in the kolel. Okay. Okay. So that's thousands. But our community is, thank God, hundreds of thousands. So after it's all said and done, the people in the kolel are still a very small minority. It's a privilege. It's a privilege to be able to support someone who is studying Torah full time. Now, it is true that with our support, the kolel cannot survive, because the amount of money that the kolels are giving out is far less than suffices to make a living for a family, for one person, even just maybe two people. But Baruch Hashem, as the Gemara says, Rov Nashim is Abrams the Oldos, that most people, not everyone is blessed, most people are blessed with families, and then it starts getting very expensive. Okay, so some individuals, the wife work, it's a whole different story. The husband and wife are both happy with that arrangement, I'm not going to stand in the way. If a woman would come to me, bin Torah, I want my husband to get a job because he promised to do so in the Ksuba. I the first law in the Ksuba, he promises to work and to support her. And she says, I had enough working. I'm saddled, I'm too tired, I'm raising children, I let him go to work. I would pass him without a question, he's mechuyev to go to work. If he can find a kollel that pays more, matov. But if he can't, he is required to go to work. But as long as he's in the kollel and he's happy and she's happy and people are supporting them, so it's, we should consider it a privilege. We shouldn't use the words that are used in Israel, parasites, this kind of stuff. That's a very big mistake, these kinds of words. Now, again, I don't want to talk about the Israeli scene. It's government funding. I'm not going into that. I'm talking about private funding from individuals. Yeah, I should also add, I'm not pointing any accusatory fingers, but I want to be upfront. No one should misinterpret me. Now, when we speak about government funding, it has to be on the up and up. It has to be 100% legal. Legal. Has to be legal. If it's illegal in any way, shape, or form, I'm absolutely opposed to it. Totally opposed to it. But you'll say, but if they won't accept certain illegal funds, then I'll have to leave the kollel. So, I'll tell you what Biggie Chiddush told my Rabbi of Soloveitchik once said. There was a yeshiva, and someone came to the Rav and said, you know, we're doing this thing, but I'm not heard now, it's not so legal. I said, you're not allowed to do it. Rabbi, we'll have to close down the yeshiva. He said, close down the yeshiva. You can't build yeshivas with money which is defrauded from governments, Chas v'Shalom. I want to be very clear about this. I'll be honest with you, I'll go further than that. I'm not completely convinced, and here I'm tentative about this, that it's appropriate to take money which is deemed, it's a little bit of a thin line, which is deemed, we'll call it charity, I mean, they use that formal term, by the United States government, in order to enable one to continue to study Torah. Not so simple. It may be in the category of Mekabel Tzedaka Min HaNochri. We are told it's not right to accept charity from non-Jews. It's a kind of a Chilul Hashem. Now, I'm careful. I'm not saying it definitively, because there are those who are like, what do you mean Tzedaka? It's our community gives and our community takes, like every other community. You know, taxes are paid by the members of the Orthodox community. We're not using the public schools, like for the local taxes, so you know, I don't know how the whole pot figures out, what's local, what's state, what's federal, but put it all into one big pot. We're giving in effect more than we're getting out, because we don't send to public schools. So we have a right to take back, it's not what it's, we're not taking more than we give in. I understand that logic too, but I'm not completely convinced that it's so. It may have an element of Chilul Hashem. Depends, of course, a different title this and title that. I'm not an expert, I really don't know. But, I want to say explicitly that project like Project COPE, which our very dear Rabbi Barish, he's not looking for any commercials here, has been involved in for many years. This is wonderful. This is wonderful. I know that they're 100% honest. 100% honest. And it goes to Rabbi Barish's credit, and it's also the credit of the late Rabbi Moshe Scherer, Zichron Levracha, who dealt with major sums of money and was so clean. And the Yetzirahs are great, because you know, it was so clean. And not only was it the right thing to do, also the smart thing to do. Because so gone of the clean. Everyone, they got away with it for X months and Y years and Z decades, at the end of the day, it comes out. And it's only someone who's squeaky clean that the Mekadosh Shem Shammai. So that's wonderful. It's job training. And there are people who are coming, the people who are beginning to realize from the most illustrious yeshiva families that it's appropriate to especially for those who are not able to sit all day over a sefer. You shouldn't be pressured into this unique lifestyle. That's for some. But for the majority, it's not that way. You should go out to make a living. If they didn't want to go to college for whatever ideological reasons or whatever reasons, there are other opportunities to get job training, to make an honest living, an umnas b'ki of a kala, as the Mishnah's Kedushin instructs us. We should encourage it. We should encourage it. We had a guest here for Shabbos. It was Rabbi Yoel Schwartz. Very unique individual. But one of his main themes, and it's one of the reasons he came to this country, is because he's trying to introduce this concept of, for lack of a better term, Charedim, getting jobs. He says he lives in Meir Shorim, where the Chalukah mentality is still very strong. And he says, no, get a job. Unless you're learning and you're really with a Tzredas Hatzlacha and you're really producing whatever that means in terms of Lima Torah. Other than that, get a job. And he's trying to make all kinds of interesting personal campaigns. The people should find parnasa, and maybe about going to the army. And so Nachal Charedi and the people were for him and against him. One of his major supporters is the famous Rabbi Aaron Leib Shteinman, who came here recently, and Rabbi Yashiv. They're both very much in his corner, but I'm just quoting from him. They haven't come out so publicly about certain things. It's not because they're afraid they're going to throw stones at them. He says, he told me this. Any leader that's afraid of stones is not a leader. I know from my machut and my matnas, Rabbi Schwartz, who lives in Rehov Salat Meir Shorim, literally they bombed out his door. They put a bomb in front of his door. Because they're upset that he's advocating to go to the army, Nachal Charedi. He's undaunted. And he says, these other gedolim, well, he says, are much greater than they were, they're certainly undaunted. But they just don't want to empty out the yeshivas. So we need yeshivas. No one is opposed to yeshivas here. There should be yeshivas. But, you know, not everyone has to spend their whole life in yeshiva. There are people, you know, again, I don't want, it's an important topic unto itself. So we have to be very careful in how we express ourselves in these matters.
What if an Ani sources you an organization and Ani is not a Jew?
Okay, I have a few points I have to bring out. I still have time to try to answer these questions. The halacha is mefarnesim aniye nochrim and aniye yisrael and they dak and shalom. One either may or must, matter of dispute, give tzedakah to individuals who are not Jewish, if they dak and shalom, because we're supposed to have peace with our neighbors, even those who are not Jewish. You know, it's difficult to do this in a proper way, but we should. I mean, recently someone came to me, not a Jewish person, so I gave him a $5 bill. Didn't break me, but I felt it was, given the circumstances, I felt it was appropriate to give Neidak HaShalom. I think we should, you know.
Is that part of Masa?
I think Masa Mani can go for that too, if I'm not mistaken. Now, of course, there are prioritizations. We get mail from the Cancer Society. Now, certainly we are opposed to cancer. We want to cure cancer. We want to do research for cancer. No question about it. But think about it. The pool of individuals who can give money to the Cancer Society in the United States of America, where I read it, what did we recently, how many new millionaires are every month? See, a million new millionaires a month, a million new millionaires a year, some amazing statistic. Baruch Hashem, the market, the economies, so they can also give.
Yeah.
They don't, it's unbelievable. I complained to my Balabatan about not giving 10%. I'm told that in America at large, the amount that's given to charity is under 1%. Is that actually correct? 2%. I was told under 1%. So just don't. I mean, no. We have to be grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who gave, built into us the understanding of charity being an obligation. It doesn't exist in the outside world. They had some of the tax forms of some of these political figures. Unbelievable. Are they embarrassed? I don't know what's going to come out. You know, it's just amazing. Unbelievable. So therefore, yeah. Okay. So you have to do. They won't. So we have to do something also. But the priorities are where there are less people to actually give the money. I want to say one more thing. There are people who have significant Meisav fund, I spoke about it originally. Make a foundation if you can. I'm told the foundation is a way that you can have the money, earn money. Now, of course, depends. At a time when it's hard to invest stock of money in a risky way. I don't advocate that. But apparently there are, nothing is risk-free, I don't want to say. So it depends. If in today, where there's no galloping inflation, you keep your stock of money in a bank, to my mind, it's acceptable. Plain bank, they give you interest, and even if they don't give you interest, it's safe. But if there's galloping runaway inflation, you have to put your money in a something which is going to overcome it. That's the sack on the rubber boys. That's the correct sack. Otherwise, it'll come down, go out to nothing. That's another important piece I forgot to talk about. Yeah.
What
about Aniyah Yerucha versus... Rashi says in Mishpatim from Chazal, Aniyah Yerucha Kodman, with the priority over Aniyah of other cities. How do you define a city? Is Riverdale its own city? Is New York a whole city? And what about Aniyah Yerucha Throw, which is its own priority? These are very serious considerations. My understanding is that from this perspective, Aniyah Yerucha means Riverdale. I don't believe that the New York City limits are what defines Aniyah Yerucha. That's my personal view. And for this reason, since there are not that many Aniyim in Riverdale, a large percentage of our stock of money, including Moschitim, Matanos, everyone who goes there, it's a stroll. I found this, just going around, the poverty there, unfortunately, is much greater. I'm not saying there's no poverty, it's poverty in the Bronx. And I get a call every year from on the Grand Concourse as a Jewish social service or something of that nature. We give money there too, because there are poor people still in the Grand Concourse area there. And there are poor people in Square and in Monroe and in Williamsburg and Barber. There are poor people, and even in Riverdale. But in Eric's shoulders, they're just more. Yeah.
It's the same logic about if you can't approve people, what about the firm versus non-firm Jews?
I gave a whole sheet, which I have right here, which is not for now, but I have a whole four pages about money to what I call UJA. Now, I have to be honest, this is not the time to go into this now. I've soured on UJA, not because I changed my philosophy. My philosophy is to give stuff to the wider Jewish community, and they're giving to all kinds of causes. I only soured because they became not just a-religious, but anti-religious. So they became to the point in certain parts of their activities, UJA Federation, which is now one pot, where they began literally campaigning against Orthodox. That to me is I have problems. Like, I'm not saying you can't do it, you can't give there, but I have, over these years, I changed my tune a little bit for that reason. So now, in the old years, they were just non-religious. Non-religious, okay. There are a lot of non-religious Jews. I don't think they're mumu lahachis. So you have to give money. But they became now, and they're launching campaigns in some places, I don't know what's going on this minute, but certainly a few years ago, actively against Torah causes. It's a little bit more complicated. I want to say a number of more important points before my time runs out. Unrealized capital gain. It's printed in the flyer. In my view, I know very little about these things. What I think it means is you put money in the stock market, the stock, whee, the Dow Jones, the Nasdaq, whoo, I hear this on the radio, I don't know what it means even, but it goes up, going up. So now you used to have a portfolio worth $1 million, and now it's worth $2 million. But it's still being invested over and over again. Am I required to give stock on that $1 million that my portfolio went up in the last year? The answer, in my opinion, is no. No. Because you haven't seen the profit yet. It's just like, what if I buy a building? I buy a building worth $1 million, and the building goes up to $2 million. You're not required. The money is, quote, frozen in a building. So even if it's in stocks, which you can liquidate at any moment and sell it, whatever's in the New York Times that day, or the Wall Street Journal, I should really say, it doesn't matter. You're still investing over and over and over again. I don't believe you're chayef to give meister on that. That's not the right. Is that the right question?
Yeah,
I answered the right question.
You're saying even though you're buying and selling.
That's correct.
I'm selling
IBM to buy Microsoft. I'm not giving any investment advice, gentlemen. But if you do that, you're a potter. You're just turning the money over. That's right.
Real estate.
That's right.
Building, you make money with the money, you buy something else, and you don't know.
That's a difference. See, that's the question is as follows: do you ever get the cash in your hand? In other words, if the cash comes in your hand, you may have a problem. In other words, if I sell it,
like if you sell stock, it comes into your account.
You got what comes into your account?
Cash.
You got cash? Yeah, in between.
If you sell it, it comes to credit in your account.
I thought it just sort of.
Yeah, but it's your account. You could draw the check from
it.
Your
name.
It's cash.
If
you sell them, it's a cashable account.
Wait a second. If I sell IBM to a Microsoft, I have to pay taxes?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I know that. I never owned any IBM or Microsoft. That's realized capital gains. Yeah. So then, in my opinion, you should give Meister right then and there. So you get a double whammy. You got to pay taxes. And you got, look, render unto Caesar was to Caesar, and unto God was to God. If you're paying, this may encourage long-term investments for myself. Now, I don't want to say, they say that that's the best kind, but I don't want to get involved in an investment advice. Yes.
Person holds on to the stock until it passes away, then
they
should be miser on the state.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not here to predict longevity. I spoke about it last time, that we are encouraged strongly, a person gets a little bit older, to give in a very open hand. A person who has made investments and he has now, thank God, accumulated, and he's coming of age. Should give the money to the stock, or give it when you're alive. I mean, it's a schuss even after that man asked him. Mark's bring a schuss to give the money out now. A person shouldn't hold on. You can't take it with you. So, I mean, give it out. Give it to the stock. There are plenty of good causes. If you're only an individual like that, I mean, I'm happy to help them out to find good causes for these things. There is a psak that although we give miser on gifts, which are given to us, it's only if the gift is cash. Many posts can say, if someone gives you an object, you're not required to give miser, because it's going to cost you money. Someone gives you something, I can't afford to give miser, take your present back. I can't afford to miser on your present. So it's miser, as most posts can say, it's a minute, so you're not required. I should add another thing. If someone gives you an object, someone gives you a becha, gives you a silver goblet, you're not required to give meister. If it gives you cash, you should give meister on what you get. I assume you can afford it, yes?
I thought that there was a cash gift.
offer to keep an entity.
Right. A person, you're asking, you see, I don't know if you went to last year. A person who does not have enough to support his family is completely exempt from mice, even on his salary and on gifts given to him. That's not a requirement at all. One final point, which sounds strange, but it's really important, before she did in the Ramo. A person in his priority, in his hierarchy of tzedakah, should support relatives of his who are in need. I'm ending. Relatives who are in need. Hakorav, korav, kodim. We spoke about children. That's one thing. That's an obligation. Now, obligation to support your brother or your cousin or someone else who may need money is considered a valid and even a priority-wise, a high level of tzedakah. Now, we didn't answer all the questions. I apologize, but this is the end of the series. If there are other questions, I'm happy to answer them after Myriv or in the upcoming weeks. Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it.
Square.
I wanted very much to end before
the table, and I just...